Hi everyone, I'm Danny, an ambassador from Scottish Adoption, here today with Aaron. We're going to be taking over the podcast. Aaron, would you share a bit of your story that led to your adoption with us?
Yeah, sure. This is something that I quite often talk about, and with my work with Scottish Adoption, quite often it seems like a very useful resource in getting people to understand the different experiences that adoptive kids go through, especially coming from the person. I think it's often it becomes more real then, rather than just hearing like a third party, you know, insight into someone else's story that they've heard about. So I'll just touch on mine for a wee bit. So I was adopted when I was 6 years old into a new family. Amazing family, best family ever. It's been a great experience. They've been absolutely amazing. And later on, my much younger brother was adopted into the family, and that's something maybe we can touch on, because just being with my blood brother, it's been very, very helpful. So I was adopted at 6 years old, and then I initially went into care at three. So I spent 3 years in care, or two and a bit years. Before that time, I was living with my birth mum and my birth dad quite sporadically, because there's a lot of different conflicts between them. My mum was quite a heavy heroin addict. She was really deep in drugs, and at the time, I lived with a group of people that were in the same apartment building, sharing cost of rent and drugs. I lived there for around 3 years, and there was multiple cases of negligence and things, and so eventually the authorities decided to take me away. My birth dad, as great as he seems now through letters that I get from him, at the time did abuse my birth mum quite heavily, to the point where she had to be taken to the hospital a few times, and I share some contact with him now. But yeah, it got pretty severe, and it seems like there was a real lack of attempt on their side to keep it going, to the degree that you know, there was cases of me saying that someone had held a gun to my head in a dispute over money, and I'd been threatened to I'd been hanged out a window as a threat, and so it was pretty gritty. And when I learned of this, it definitely felt quite foreign, because I was so young, I don't really remember it. But yeah, that's just a summary of my experience. And I'm just telling it because it often seems to bring the story down to other people's level, especially when coming from me. And I haven't been forced into saying this. This is completely on my own volition. I actually enjoy speaking about it, because it seems quite therapeutic. So yeah, maybe Danny, you can talk about your experience, and then we can compare and, you know, draw conclusions between it.
Thanks so much for sharing that, Aaron. Just every time, yeah, you tell your story, I'm just always like, just blown away. You don't do things by halves, do you?
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah, just the way you tell it, just honestly. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I think my story is definitely less, don't know what the right word would be, dramatic maybe, I don't know. Yeah. A bit more simple. I was put into care when I was about two-ish, maybe younger. I'm so vague on all the timings, but I was adopted when I was about 2.5, along with one of my blood relations, sibling, into the same family. And it's actually quite interesting listening to your story, Aaron, and I heard it one or two times before, just that from what I know, I think I know maybe less than you do, but I know that part of the reason for us ending up needing to be put up for adoption was that our birth dad was a really bad heroin addict. So there's definitely that commonality there. And also our birth mum had pretty significant additional support needs. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they maybe had a label for it back then, but she certainly, you know, can barely read or write, really struggled to cope, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that pretty much is what led to us being in care. And I know there's different types of ways people end up in care, but for my sister and I, it was like a voluntary thing. Mm. But when I say voluntary, it was kind of, you know, you're not coping, so, you know, kind of give them up or will be taken.
Or else.
Yeah, kind of thing. So technically it was voluntary, but I mean, that's kind of what I've been told, or I know. So maybe it was actually a lot more voluntary than that. But so yeah, that's my story. Adopted along with my sibling at 2.5 into the same family. That's about it, really. So yeah, a lot less dramatic. No guns or windows.
Jeez, every time I tell you what, guys, every time I say that, it seems like something out of John Wick. And maybe, I mean, it was just record from the time, so I'm not sure to what degree, you know, that is 100% true. I can't validate it with everyone. It was just in my records, and I don't remember it. So it's an odd differentiation between who I am now and who I once was. And the clarity of these things is definitely very weak for me, to the degree that, you know, smells are the closest thing I have to memories. You know, I'll get a whiff of maybe a wee bit of marijuana, or I'll smell some cologne, or, you know, I'll smell some perfume, and I'll be like, oh, there's birth mom, and there's birth dad. But I think what's great about me and Danny is, like, we've got very varied experiences. But I think, like, you'll notice in the last podcast we've done is that we have quite a few conclusions that have come to the same. And I think I think we're going to segue today. Our podcast, I think, is going to be covering a list of things like drug abuse and the effects and root causes of adoption. And so we were talking about this before the podcast, actually, and how the drugs seems to be a quite a common factor in kids that are adopted. And that's pretty obvious as to why, because it limits a parent's ability to parent. And maybe we can talk, Danny, do you know, and what was the effects on you with drugs directly? What, you know?
To be honest, I don't know the full extent of things by choice, because I think there were maybe some bits that, I don't know how gnarly, but I think there were some bits that were maybe quite grim, where I just, to be honest, I don't want to know. But I know basically if our birth dad hadn't been a drug addict, which, you know, caused problems such as, you know, abuse, neglect, all that sort of things, financial, I don't think we would have ended up in care, because it was more, our birth mom needed more support or couldn't look after that. And perhaps if she'd had that paternal support as well, as opposed to the opposite, kind of being hindered by him, I think, yeah, we would not have ended up in care, I don't think.
That just shows how big of an impediment it is. And it's definitely something that can strike people down, even the best of people. And an idea that I was thinking about earlier is, being in poverty is one thing. There's a lot of families and there's a lot of people affected by poverty, but that isn't an excuse to take a child away from them. What is a good reason to take a child away is drugs. No matter the background, you can be in poverty or you can be hyper rich. If you're affected by drugs, I mean, it's one of the largest impediments on lifestyle and just the health and safety of children. And so definitely if we're talking about the root causes of adoption, drugs is, I may even say, the largest problem, and it is correlated to poverty, but not directly. They're not all people in poverty are affected by drugs, but it definitely seems like if we want to really get into the root issues, it's something that needs to be talked about more. I've got no idea how to affect change. I mean, of course, we can talk about it at the end of the day, but it's something that's really hard to. If there was a solution, you know, it'd be well known, but there's not really. And it's something that I feel like needs to be tackled more, because as much as talking about adoption helps, it's like we're pouring water into a bathtub with a massive hole in the bottom. like it's good, and it will, you know, it'll maybe slow it down, but, you know, what needs to be fixed is the massive hole in the bottom. And last podcast we had, maybe you can comment on this, Danny. Last podcast we had, we talked a bit about how to improve the experience afterwards by talking about it. But what also needs to be talked about, and I think most effort has to be put towards, is how to solve the problem before it even becomes a problem.
Yeah. Like, what do you think, Aaron, about, because we're kind of talking about, you know, you talk about this hole in the bathtub, kind of ways to, obviously there's never going to be a quick fix, a kind of bandage over it, but some things, I remember kind of Mel, was, you were chatting with her as well, but things like early intervention, family support, things like that. Do you think that could help solve the problem, or do you think there's some drawbacks to that, or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I am, again, like we say, it's so variable that I can only really speak for myself. It's such a complex issue. At the end of the day, it depends what support is meant. If it's financial, I would argue, you know, if you gave money to my birth mum, she would have just killed herself with it. If you were to give money to my birth dad, he probably would have just laughed at my birth mum and me. Their financial help given to people affected by drugs usually isn't the best thing. It's like giving them, you know, a taser or a gun, like a gun that can do good, you know, if you aim it in the right direction. I wouldn't trust a hobo or a drug addict to aim a gun in the right direction. And so I wouldn't, in that sense, it's extremely hard. Now, maybe things like spending time in community centers, which is sometimes something we do quite a bit at Scottish Adoption, or community centers is a huge part. Or in terms of early intervention, maybe even just talking, maybe even just agreeing, you know, for these adults to come together that are affected by drugs and just talk about their experiences, like a therapy group that has to be mandated for people who have children that are affected by their drug use. I think that would be absolutely massive. And even for them to hear us talking about it, which is something that we're doing. I'm not sure what you think about it, because, and you were talking about your mother and, you know, the early intervention for that. What would that have been? Would that have maybe been, you know, education, or, because that's huge.
I think maybe more, maybe some support, which I know actually she did get a bit of. There was a woman who came in to help her. So it's debatable. I mean, I think you could argue that, you know, that's so good that it wasn't just immediately, you know, give your kids up. They put things in place to kind of help support her. But there's always pros and cons, because I mean, the cons of that is it ended up with the same result, us being in care, but it happened later. So I'm lucky that that didn't really affect me, because I was still quite young. So I have no memories regardless, but you know, that's not like the same can't be said for my sister. So if it was going to be the same result, maybe actually it would have been better if we've been put into care just earlier on. I feel like the support was almost, and this actually makes me think of, and it's not the same thing, but kind of bring me on to the whole children in foster care, this kind of drift, where it's like the support of their birth parents isn't, what Mel was saying, is like it's not enough support, that it's like, yeah, the children are totally fine, safe, happy, healthy, they can go live with you, but it's not so minimal that they can't have any contact or anything. So they're just constantly, it's not enough to be put up for adoption. It's not kind of bad enough, but it's not good enough to go back home.
Yeah, so, I can definitely see that. I mean, talking about the bathtub analogy, it's like, you know, in this case, we're sealing up the hole in the bottom of the bathtub, but we're leaving just enough space so that it still runs out even with the tap full on. You know what I mean? It seems to almost prolong the experience for the child who's ultimately going to be adopted, and prolong the attachment that the birth parent has to their adopted child, and also make the situation more bureaucratic, massively more bureaucratic. It's going to take a lot more financial help in terms of how much it will cost, and that obviously affects how much you can distribute help to other people. I'm not sure what you think on this, but do you think in terms of the system, do you think it would be better if the system was easier to take children away from their birth parents in hazardous situations, or harder? Because you were saying, you know, how earlier on it might have just been better, knowing that that was kind of on the horizon, that you should have been taken away earlier, and that would have been a more fluid process. For me, I feel exactly the same. What do you think about that?
Well, it's interesting, because it's just so dependent. Because having said that, I'm like, yeah, maybe in that example. But then equally, I'm like, you know, I really do believe in like second chances and, you know, supporting someone as best you can. So actually, no. Or even for like the sake, I don't know how she feels about it. I've never spoken to her. But even for maybe the sake of my birth mom, maybe she'll have peace of mind of like, you know, I tried. I didn't give up. I tried everything I could. It still wasn't working. So hopefully she won't be left with that regret of like, you know, maybe if I tried a bit harder, maybe, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it's always better, even if it doesn't work out, just in life in general, I think it's always better to try, give it your own all, ask for help, get support. And, you know, maybe it will be the same outcome. But as we're saying, it's hindsight's 20/20. You know, it's so easy in hindsight to say, nope, you know, you should have taken us away earlier or whatever. But actually, I think it is good to give people a chance, because I'm sure there are some people out there who are like, you know, thank goodness, you know, I nearly was taken into care, but they got the extra support in, and I'm so glad.
Yeah.
Mixed bag. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, in terms of this, I completely agree. There's a fine line that we have to make sure we stay between. And one is that the government shouldn't have the power just to take kids away from parents over arbitrary small things. Mm-hmm. But then also that the process shouldn't be so bureaucratic and lengthy and overconstructed that it really hampers what would have been a good transition for the child and better all. In terms of poverty and drugs, poverty is a feedback loop of, you know, different problems. So a feedback loop is an input, a process that amplifies the input, and then an output that feeds the input again, and it just keeps on looping. Poverty is that. Drugs accelerate that. And in my eyes, in my situation, I think looking back on all the things that I've seen in all the different parts, I think the best thing for me would have just been to go, this in no sense is going to go in a situation that will help me. Even at its best, I will still be in a bad situation. And so the only way to kind of end that extremely, extremely, you know, momentum-based feedback loop is to just cut it, you know, just to sever it. And I don't know. You've got to imagine as well that not only may it be caring for the adoptee, it might also be caring for the person, the birth parent. They might not be in a situation financially to be able to cope with such things, and they might find that the space and room that's given to them by that may allow them to fix things up. Mm-hmm. But again, so varied. I just think at the end of everything, how we need to look at it is like a simple simulation. We've got different variables such as time spent in care, when the children go in, how long they're in for, how bureaucratic and lengthy the process is, the speed of which it's done, how much research has to be done until it's completed, all the different variables that you can think of, and then how can we best tweak each of these to make the system as efficient and as good as possible.
Yeah.
I think more power to the people who have the role of making sure that these kids are safe. Because at the end of the day, the spectrum of outcomes that could have come from me being with my birth parents doesn't encompass even the lowest of the low things that could have happened if I'd been in the family I'm in now. So in that sense, no matter what happened, I would have been better. And so for me, I give great importance, and I give great thanks as well to the people that decided to put me through that process.
I get you. And just thinking of what you've said, so it sounds like you're saying that overall, just based on your own experience, you think it would be better if the people in power had slightly more kind of say in removing children from their biological families and things like that. Was that kind of what you were saying?
Yeah, I find this hard. For me, I'm quite a individualist, you know, the government shouldn't get too much say. But on the flip side, you've got to understand that if I was with my birth parents, my children, in all likelihood, on the statistics, would have been in probably the same situation as me, and that would have just been passed down. And so really what we're trying to find here is the balance between the powers of the government to take kids away and also the good that can come from giving them to families that are ultimately better suited to foster those children and foster, you know, and grow them. And so I personally, right now, after meeting some people that have been through the system and it's not gone well, believe that there should be more things in place to allow that.
Yeah, no, I get you. I was just thinking slightly, I mean, it's always the, you know, great power comes great responsibility type of thing. But
Spider-Man.
You know, abusive power, but I was more just thinking, let's say, and I'm totally agree with you that it should be, you know, we should do what's best for the child. If that means giving people more power to remove them earlier, totally agree with you. I'm just thinking that already there seems to be quite a lot of kind of imbalance in whose kids are removed. For instance, you know, if you're from a lower socioeconomic status, if you have additional support needs, the chance of your children being removed from you is ridiculously high compared to those with who don't have additional support needs.
Yeah.
So, which, you know, you could say maybe there are reasons from that, because, you know, there is a correlation between things like drugs, violence, crime, and poverty. Mm-hmm. But just because there's a correlation doesn't mean we can assume or be like, you know, even something to do with address, which I find ridiculous, but, you know, that can have an impact. If you see that a child, you know, maybe there's a query that they're being abused, but they're in, you know, somewhere posh, like, I don't know, Morningside, compared to like Ox Gangs or Broomhouse, you're probably going to take the Broomhouse Ox Gangs one more seriously. I'm obviously not a social worker, so I don't mean to speak out of turn, but
yeah, I mean, yeah. That is ultimately, like we talked previously in the last one about biases, and that obviously will play a role. And I think with all things in society, people need equality of opportunity, so we need equal access to the resources to help us get out of these situations. And as we touched on in the last one, not to be characterized by, say, a postcode, because that's as similar as being characterized as being adopted. Adopted Aaron, you know, it's a generalization that maybe it has some relation, but it's not doesn't have the depth, and it doesn't have the it doesn't have the depth necessary to use it as any indicator of anything. And so I completely agree, because I'm sure there's some horrendous families out there in the best of situations. And like I said, the drugs affects everyone, and so it doesn't matter, you know. And finding this balance is definitely difficult, and this is something that I've recently, from talking about things, which is the great benefit of talking, I come to the conclusion that, you know, like I said, Scottish adoption and the service that we provide, as great as it is, it's not tackling the core issues. And who is? Now, I think ultimately the people in positions of power, you know, the politicians, not to get political, but the track record on these things is pretty horrendous in Scotland. And just to refer to some statistics, the drug death rate in Scotland is higher than any European nation. Higher than even the second highest by three times, which is absolutely extraordinary. I'm talking per capita as well. So the effects of this is huge. Now, correlated to that, which is something that's quite interesting, is also the adoption rates per capita. And they're very similar. And Scotland is so much above any other nation in the European Union. You've got to wonder what has gone wrong. And so that's something that needs to be talked about. Like I'm saying, I'm not talking about solving poverty, but the drug issue, I think if that is not removed, but if that's reduced, would have a massive effect on the kids that have to go into care.
Yeah, but I would as well, just when you said, you know, what's got gone wrong with such high adoption rates, on the flip side of that, you know, these aren't high, you know, care or whatever rates or adoption rates. And I think in some ways it's a good thing that's high, because in other countries their adoption rates are so low, but their, you know, orphan rates or people in care rates are ridiculously high. So in some ways I feel like
more adopted kids,
the high adoption rates is actually a good thing.
But yeah, it's a supply and demand issue. Like if the supply is high, then if the demand is high, then the supply is high. And so maybe what would be interesting is to take statistics on the amount of kids that may be considered needing adopted per capita, and then comparing that to the number of kids that are adopted. Because I would hedge my bet on, it's not a case that Scotland is better at adopting than every other nation in Europe by a factor of three, but it's that there are so many more kids that are going through the system that need to be adopted. The drug thing is absolutely nuts. I mean, if just take time when you're watching this podcast, go take a look at drug death rates in Scotland, and it's pretty gloom. And like you'll hear from many people, I think it's really touched them quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, what can be done about this? I could only theorize. Personally, I think a lot of it, like you're saying, Danny, was the support that these people get. Education is huge. Now, Scotland's education has been pretty good for the last, say, half century. And so I'm not sure if that's the main thing that it'd be correlated to. Then maybe it might be community. Maybe it might be, I don't know, not knowing how to control wealth. Maybe it might be assets. Maybe it might be, I know one thing that's huge that I've found out about is slang. Slang impairs someone's ability to climb socioeconomic ladders by a large amount. If you can't actually converse properly with someone like me, I used to be a wee slang ball. It's extremely hard to. My slang was extremely hard to understand, and so that may be something as well. I don't really know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about what you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so complex. Like, goodness knows, but there's definitely something there though, because if you take a look at the charts, it's flat across all European nations, some variation. Now in Scotland, is like, poof. So. Yeah, that's my thoughts. Okay. Hopefully next week when we... Oh, yeah. Okay.
Aaron, what about just kind of following on from what you're saying and, you know, how we could try and change it in general, but like to you specifically, how do you think the system could have been better for you?
This is why, Danny, when you told me about your experience, I was quite blown away because my experience personally was great. Mm. Not the first 3 years of my life, but the family I was put into was great. The foster carers that I was with were great. Mm-hmm. The speed at which it was done was great. Looking back on the papers, the amount of research that was done on the issue and the system put in place seems pretty effective. Like we talked about, I think before the podcast, is that there has been a kind of a limitation on the powers that a state has to take away children from their birth families. But in my case, adoption has been a pretty blissful experience, and like I was saying, like after hearing yours, Danny, I was very shocked because I wasn't aware of situations that were comparatively bad. If there was anything that had to be changed, this is something that I've been thinking about quite a bit as well, is that there needs to be a centralized online database with all information that is accessible after a certain age. And I understand there are similar things, but for me to access my information, I have to contact multiple people, I have to wait quite a bit of time, I have to have it posted to me. It's very lengthy and it's time-consuming process, and so I can imagine one of the things that could change is that, you know, we need to innovate a wee bit on how this information is stored and how it's distributed. What about you?
Yeah, I hadn't thought about the information thing before. That's a really good point. I guess for me, because like you said, slightly different experiences, but I am just overall like really grateful for everything. I feel like no family, whether it's biological or not, is perfect, but I am just, yeah, very grateful for the way things turned out for me. But yeah, I think maybe for me, the system could have been slightly better if there'd been more kind of support post-adoption or checks. Like, I know, don't get me wrong, I know that there are checks and there is support, and it's increasingly so. In fact, I think compared to when I was adopted, compared to now, there's been a huge difference over the last 10, 20 years or so. So that's definitely improving. But I think at the time when I was adopted, it was, I don't think it was good enough. And I get, you know, they're kind of like, not my job's done, but it's kind of seen as, you know, adoption is a happily ever after. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, but you can't just, you know, suddenly do this and then be like, okay, bye. Mm-hmm. Because it's not always a happily ever after. Mm-hmm. So I think for me personally, more support post-adoption or some checks. Mm-hmm. I think as well, I don't know exactly to what extent, but when I was talking about the kind of address or kind of assumptions, I think that is something that still needs to be worked on. I think in general, like we said, everyone has implicit biases, everyone has assumptions. But I know various people who have either been adopted or are adopters from different backgrounds, and there seems to be a common theme that based on their basically socioeconomic background, they are treated differently or have different mm-hmm. experiences. And I think it's too much of a theme to be a coincidence.
Yeah.
So I think there is still, I think basically overall, the system has improved dramatically and continues to do so, in part thanks to the fact that we're having these sort of conversations. We have this platform, people are listening. It's amazing. Even having like the teen group, you know, that's so great. But I think there still is, you know, work that needs to be done, sort of thing.
Yeah, like you were saying, and I think I brought this up, my experiences were great. And I think, Danny, I mean, hence the reason why we're ambassadors of a charity that I think is the oldest charity in Scotland, talking on a podcast about our experience.
Yeah.
It's like we're obviously, like, I feel privileged in some sense. I mean, everyone has privileges, but I'm grateful as well. But one of the great things I think, and one of the things that might motivate, you know, whoever it is who has, I mean, politicians or just the everyday person about this, is that the system in Scotland for adoption has been built to cope with the quite high demand for, you know, the quite high supply of adopted kids. Now, if we were to reduce that, the quality per child would increase massively. And so that's the kind of that's a great benefit that would come if we could reduce the number of children that have to be adopted in the first place, because we would still have all the infrastructure and resources and people working on it, but it would just be amongst fewer people, which means we'd be able to spend more time post care, and we'd be able to spend more time thinking about it, and we'd be able to spend more time in prep groups, and there'd be more resources per person.
Mm. But then wouldn't that money be going into supporting the biological families so that people didn't end up needing adopted, or wouldn't it, you know, it wouldn't be the same amount of money because it would be going into money going into other things.
Well, I think, I'm not sure. I mean, I think in my eyes, I think even if it was to decrease the number of kids that needed adopted, the same amount of funding would probably mean better quality experience for people going through the system. Mm-hmm. And hence, if you have a better quality experience, which is something that people don't really take into account, if you have a better quality experience, the likelihood of people wanting to adopt will increase. Because if word passes that it's a rubbish experience, then people might not be up. And might not be up for going in. And that's something I've heard personally from people I know, adults that are older than me, and they've said, you know, I really wanted to do this, but when I touched the system, it didn't look like a process I wanted to go through, so I stepped out.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think a combination. I think at the end of the day, reducing these root causes that we were talking about would just be so great across the board. Yeah. But yeah,
I was also just thinking, yeah, just quickly when I was what you were saying about the whole more support post-adoption or checks, then what you said about how loads of people might be looking to adopt, but they're, you know, the system's too, they don't like it, it's too much for them, it's too hard, whatever. And yeah, mm-hmm. that's definitely something to take into account, because I'm thinking, you know, at this point in time, I think I would probably like to adopt when I'm older, but would I like, you know, they're constantly being social workers there checking up on me, all this, you know, mm-hmm. we've got this to support you, we've got this. I probably would be like, just leave me alone with my wains, please. You know, so
yeah.
it's a double-edged sword.
It definitely is. It's all of this is a spectrum of things that can be done, and a balance that needs to be found. And the quicker we find the balance and the right way to go about it, at the end of the day, the better the experience, and the more kids that they get to be put in better care systems, which I can speak for it. It's been awesome. But yeah, this has been a great conversation we've had. We've kind of covered quite a bit. And we're definitely going to keep talking about it across, like every time we meet, we always talk about these things. So we'll come with new ideas, and hopefully next podcast we'll have quite a few more people joining, which means more input, which means better conversations, and we'll cover another broad range of subjects.
Thanks everyone who's been listening to this. If you've made it to the end, well done. Not with me and Aaron for that long, very impressive.
Yeah.
But no, genuinely, thanks so much. We're really appreciative for the opportunity to do this and for you to be listening to us. And thank you as well, Aaron, for the great chat. And
yeah, thank you, Diana.
The podcast that we've taken over / stolen. Hope to do it again soon.
We've raided their base. We're now keeping them hostage. Yeah, you won't hear from them for the next few weeks.
Exactly. You have to listen to the end of the podcast to find out how to get them back. Yeah.
Don't mess with adopted kids, guys. Anyway, it's been great. Yeah, thank you. So hopefully see you soon.
Yeah. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.